Here on Downtown, it's time for Message in the Bottle, brought to you by Bangor Wine and Cheese Company at 86 Hammond Street in downtown Bangor. We are joined by the hopefully rested and refreshed Eric Meehan. Hello, Eric.
Hi, guys.
Hello. Hello. Welcome.
Fun. I just discovered some syrup that this morning. Delightful. We'll deal with that later. I hope everybody's good. Rested and refreshed, but my goodness. Multiple sports, being out in the sun, that takes the toll on you. My goodness. I'm like hoarse today. We had another game yesterday. I'm hoarse all the time. I always kind of knew this, but anytime you listen to like a basketball coach midseason, in some sports interview, it would always be like, I get it. Which is funny because the children don't listen to me.
No. But you mentioned on the socials, though, that you are perhaps already a master at some of the coaching cliches. Can you throw out a couple for us and we'll listen?
For certain. Well, I find what's unfortunate is, and I guess some kids have probably seen them, but I find myself doing the little bingo, little dinga, things like that. I haven't broken into the Ferris Bueller, hey, about yet. I'll save that for the crowd. It's tremendous. And, the other one from Bull Durham is how I'm like, remember? One is, this is fun. It's supposed to be fun. It's a game, damn it. I don't say that. I try not to, maybe under my breath. And then, certainly the, throw, whatever. I've said so many that I don't remember what it is, but about throw strikes, this is democracy. It's really, and the other part of it that is absolutely exhausting, and any parent out there who's ever watched their kid sort of in the spotlight, even little league spotlight or whatever, Eric has started pitching, right? And you're just like, just got to treat him like any other kid. Just got to treat him like any other kid. Don't call him hun. Don't say anything about what we worked on at home. Be like, let's go 1-7. Let's do this right down the pipe, baby. It's ridiculously hard, but it's a lot of fun. And I encourage anybody out there, by the way, to volunteer for youth, whatever. It forces you to bring out the best in you, which is hard for me because I don't have a lot in there. this is sort of the beginning of the world tour. We talked about Appalachians last week and sort of this idea that, wine is not made in a vacuum, like any agricultural product not made in a vacuum, right? And now we're going to sort of, start to talk about these varying locations. But I did want to mention, I don't think I got to this last week, but I always like to mention sort of why we in America, A, care now, and B, didn't quite know what the heck we were talking about for a very long time. And that is just a reminder that the American wine industry, like so many American industries, is very, very smart, very crafty, very ready to, either jump at whatever opportunities there are and or survive. So, bear in mind, this is an industry that, during Prohibition, the smarter wine companies said, oh, we're not making wine for people to drink. We're making it for religious ceremonies. And that's, our eyes at God. And they got away with it. So this is the same industry that when our, fighting men and women came back from World War II, having been on the ground in so many locations where there's celebrated wine, food, culture. And we're not just talking France. We're talking Italy. We're talking Belgium. We're talking Germany, of course. So there was all of a sudden all these Americans who had been in places where there was really, really deep, deep-rooted culture in the things that we're finally now rediscovering. But, of course, what happened is when they came back, the opportunistic wine industry and food industry, we exhibited what we, I guess, define as progress, which is taking these wonderful ideas and basically incorporating them into the generation that created fast food, frozen meals, TV dinners, things like that. They also, of course, created things like jug wine and what we're going to talk about for the rest of the day, which is my favorite, hearty Burgundy, right? So anybody who worked in a Joe job in the wine industry, and of course, anybody who, you know, drank wines, especially with perhaps their old school Sicilian grandfathers or whatever, you drank these jug wines, these 3-liter jug wines. They were labeled things like Chablis, right? Chablis, hearty Burgundy, things like that. And of course, they're taking these Appalachian names, right? Champagne, which I don't know how they still get away with it, but Cooks from California still gets away with saying they make California champagne. And they absconded with these. And at the time, there was no real, you know, strong governmental or non-governmental organization to enforce Appalachian rules, things like that. Regions of origin, etc. So these things were basically allowed for decades, and that's why people still to this day think that Burgundy is something rich and dark and whatever, when it's actually a very sort of light, playful Pinot Noir by law, et cetera. So it's important to kind of remember that we're just now coming out of that, and it's fair to say that the advent of the sort of the food culture that was spawned by I suppose early on, Julia Child, Jacques Pepin, then, of course, Emeril Lagasse, Anthony Bourdain, whoever it was that sort of, you know, popped your proverbial food cherry. Now people care again. And there are governmental organizations and non-governmental organizations that are enforcing these rules of you can't call that Burgundy. Why? Because it's not from there, pal. And we know it's not because it's made in California. Not to say that California doesn't make some incredibly good Pinot Noir, but I think you know where I'm going with that. So, Burgundy itself is where we're going to sort of start the tour, because it's important, whether we like it or not. Like I said last week, the French are the ones that sort of codified what it is to codify wine. It started with religion, with the Cistercian monks in the 2nd century. Just kept going. The Cistercians, however, were the first ones that started keeping records. The Benedictines were the large land holders, but the Cistercians were the ones who started keeping records for anyone keeping track of, like playbooks, like baseball. There you go. By the way, I've started to learn how to keep score in baseball. That's archaic. Moving on. Woo. apparently there's an app for that, so I'm going to have to look into that. But yes, the Cistercians, they were the ones that started to create these walled-in vineyards that you still see to this day, including the largest one called Clos de Vougeot. It's this idea of this plot is different from this plot is different from this plot, and here's why. Here are the records that go back a very long way and say that. Now, you're probably all saying, but Eric, climate change. And I'm saying back to you, you're right. But they don't want to admit to that and admit that their wines are far richer and more dense than they used to be because of that. It's actually kind of interesting, especially in Burgundy, where the practice of chapitalization, which is adding sugar to boost your alcohol content and also sort of your richness and your fullness, and or, you know, under the cover of night, bringing in tanker trucks from southern France full of denser wines. Those were regular practices in Burgundy. And it's almost laughable. You really just don't even need to think about it anymore, because ripening is happening. The things we have to worry about today are far more elemental. Your hail, your freezes, your droughts, things like that. So Burgundy is sort of the heartland of all this. We'll get into more of it because it's a fairly complex land. But if you can understand Burgundy, you will understand all the rest of this jibber-jabber that I will be doing over the next 6 months. But in the meantime, I will just say to everybody, please pop into the shop, come on in, because we've got lots of awesome new wines and old friends in new vintages that are coming in starting Friday, I believe. There's speaking of Burgundy, an incredible, incredible value. I know I say this, it's going to be $45, but it's an incredible value, I promise you, from one of the finest vineyards in Burgundy. So there you go. Hop in, say hi, and I'll talk to you next week.
Hey, good hustle there, Eric. Good hustle.
what I do. Thank you. Nice, by the way. Nice. Little bingo. Talk to you next week.
Thanks, Eric. See you then. Eric Meehan, Bangor Wine and Cheese Company. Message in the Bottle. Brought to you every week here on Downtown, Tuesday afternoons, by Position, author Colin Fleming.